All Eyes on Fishing with Josh Sheldon, Brad Qualley, and Mitch Peterson, leading you to the next level.
Welcome back, All Eyes on Fishing. Today we're going to be talking about cranks, crankbaits, hard baits, stick baits, whatever you want to call it, but things that you cast from shore, pull behind the boat. So we're going to talk about that, give you some insight of what we do and what we find that works. What do you think, Mitch?
Well, you know, this is the kind of the time of the year where, here in Colorado anyway, we're kind of end of July. It's switching over from a real typical jig bite, live bait rigs. A lot of the fish are now moving off some of that shallower structure and they're suspending in our reservoirs. So now's the time that we like to switch over and start trolling crankbaits.
Well, the reason why they're suspending is because we've had bait fish hatch, and now if we got a couple things we can talk about: pitching shores and then also pulling cranks behind a boat. So if you're pulling cranks behind a boat, of course the bait ball, you're going to start seeing bait balls because of the hatch, and then you're going to start focusing on pulling those suspended fish.
Right, and we have to let's address terminology. I was corrected several times after our last podcast when all of us used the term pitching, because evidently the three of us know what pitching mean, and several people, especially bass guys, know that pitching is something different than casting shallow. So after several instant messages and personal messages, I was corrected that casting shallow and pitching are two different things. So we're actually talking about casting shallow. That's for you bass guys. And for the rest of us who don't care what pitching and casting is, you know, you're casting from your boat up towards shore.
Yeah, I call it pitching just because that's what it is. But I understand what they're talking about.
Yeah, pitching, they're talking about, you know, kind of skipping it along the water and maybe up under docks or in the heavy cover or whatever. You know, I read an article on it. Somebody sent me an article displaying the difference. You know, and that's cool if you care, but I really don't. So
yeah, we're gonna use it kind of simultaneously.
Yeah, interchangeable.
We'll try to say casting. But anyway, so do we want to talk about like Mitch was talking about the bait fish? So we'll start off with talking about boats. So the first thing you want to do this time of year is, if you're out in the boat, you're gonna look for those pods of bait fish that are schooling up. I mean, it'll be obvious on your screen. And we have some photos of it, so take a look at our library. We'll post some photos of what a ball of bait fish looks like, because it's, once you see it, you're not gonna.
Yeah, and we've posted them before on All Eyes on Fishing Facebook. If you go on there and you scroll through the photos in the library, or even Instagram, if you follow us on Instagram, you'll be able to see that we've posted them before, what it looks like. You know, the shad, the smelt, whatever you have inside those lakes of yours, owl wives, whatever. You know, any bait fish that's going to suspend in a school higher up in the water column, that's what we're talking about bait balls or clouds of bait.
So, and really what's going on right now is the bait fish hatch happened a while ago, but they're so small that it's not really worth it for walleyes and other predator fish to even go after them. But now they've grown a little bit to where they're, you know, an inch and a half. They're getting up to make it worthwhile for the fish to use the energy to go get that forage. So that's really the big picture reason why the fish are transitioning now and switching to this different food source.
Because there's a ton of them.
Yeah, and so, it's golden corral for the for the walleyes.
Yeah, no, definitely is. You know what? And not just walleyes.
No, everything.
I mean, trout. Everything. Wipers, trout, bass, smallies. I've caught a ton of
catfish.
Them.
I mean, you know, you go to Lake McConaughey, Nebraska, and you catch more catfish trolling crankbaits than you can, you know, ever even dream of.
So let's talk about the type of water that we're in. So if we're pulling, let's say we're over 30 feet of water, 25, 30 feet, that ball of bait fish, sometimes it'll extend way down in the water column. But typically you're going to see it from the surface, you know, down 8-9 feet, something like that. So how do you guys, with that, let's say it is 8 foot, the ball of bait fish is 8 foot from the surface is what you're kind of marking. How do you run your stuff? What are you going to do?
Well, you're going to look for arches. You're going to look for the fish and how they relate to them. For example, I was fishing Pueblo Reservoir a couple weeks ago, and lots of shad. Lots of shad in big balls, and so much so that if it almost looks like the small ones that die look like glitter on top of the water. Just little specks of silver everywhere. And the walleyes were relating to the balls of fish, but they were probably 10 to 12 feet deeper. So I approached it with running my cranks with snap weights to get them towards that 20-foot mark. And the second I got in that 20-foot mark, I started catching walleyes one after another.
So the ball of bait fish was down about 10 feet then?
It was about 8. And then so walleyes were right about 20, and I was getting my bait down there around 18, 19.
So the reason why we're running them outside the ball of bait fish, because it looks like there's fish escaping. If you try running it right through the middle, now you're competing with a 2,000 or whatever.
And I ran it through the middle. You always run one up high because, you know, there's going to be those fish that might be in with the bait that you can't see on your graph. And so you always run one up, you know, 15 feet behind the board, so it goes a few feet down. And I ran that one, and that's the only rod I didn't catch a fish on.
I typically don't run that deep underneath them. I'll typically keep it about 5 to 7 feet underneath the ball of bait fish. I was out on Chatfield about 2 weeks ago, and I had the same type of balls of bait fish that were about 8 feet, and I was running my stuff at 12, and I ended up catching 7 or 8 walleye within 15, 20 minutes, and they all came at that range. So even the ones that I was running in the middle of the bait fish,
right,
I moved down. Well, except for one. I kept my outside rod just at 8 foot deep. And it was funny because the only time I caught smallies, smallmouth bass,
right,
was the higher up. They were actually at that 8 foot range.
Yep.
So, but everything that I was running between 12 and 14 feet down, it was all walleye.
Yeah. And what kind of bait you use too? I mean, what kind of crankbait you use is, you know, it's kind of up to you. I was catching them on minnow imitating type crankbaits, so the longer, narrower ones. I was catching them on the shad type crankbaits. And whatever crankbait is your crankbait of choice, you know, whether you be whether you're a flicker guy or you're a shad wrap guy or a, you know, salmo guy or whatever it is you like to do. Anything, you know, I was just rolling through them, and whichever ones I started catching them on, that's what I started narrowing my search down.
Me and Mitch have talked about this in the boat for hours about crankbait selection, and Mitch has a pretty good theory on this. Is that, is it really the color, or is it the type, or is it because you're comfortable with catching fish on that? You've caught a lot of, let's say, on the Berkeley, so you start running more.
Yep.
Now it seems like the flicker shad, Fire Tiger, is out producing.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it feels like to me a lot of times it's more getting your crankbait close enough to that walleye, so it's in that zone to where it triggers them to go after it. I think, you know, we've ran cranks where, say, we're, you know, maybe 4 to 5 feet above where we're marking fish, and we may troll through that area a few times and not get anything. We let out more line to let our crankbaits dig a little deeper, and now we're within, say, 2 feet of, you know, above those arches. Bam! Now it triggered a strike just because it was just that much closer.
Well, and that's a good point too, as far as you know, I've been seeing a lot of pictures on Instagram and Facebook from all of our friends where, you know, you have a 20-inch fish that swallowed a 12-inch fish, you know, and the tail's sticking out, and you're thinking to yourself, I mean, he's choking himself on the damn fish. Or you have a muskie that comes up and hits a walleye, and he can't get him down his throat, and he's got him sideways in his mouth. So I don't think it's a bad idea to throw on that extra large, you know, one crankbait and see what you can get. I can't tell you how many times I've caught a 6-inch walleye on a, you know, 4-inch, 5-inch bait.
No, you're right. Definitely. I mean, typically we start off with number 5. That's kind of our go-to, and kind of fine-tune it from there. Sometimes we'll jump down to a 4. Sometimes we'll go to a 7. And when we're casting up in shore in the spring and the fall, we're going to go bigger. We could talk about that another time or even later in this. But typically we're not trolling those. But we're not using the great big baits, except for at night. We get out and get our night groove on and start trying to pull boards out at night. Yeah, we'll usually go bigger just because you want that bigger silhouette, that easier for the fish to find. But yeah, we'll typically use 9s, 11s, and 13s when we're running night trolling.
That's funny because I use 5s sparingly. I mean, I've got 2 boxes of 5 this and 5 that, and I find that even early in the year, most times I'll catch more fish on 7s.
No way. No. I mean, what do you think, Mitch?
I think in the springtime, I've had better success with a number 5 versus, say, a number 7 or 9. But later on in the summer, like right now.
Right now, yeah.
Again, where the bait fish are smaller, or they've gotten bigger now. Now it's a good time to kind of upsize to that 7 or 9. Yeah.
But if you're going to be casting, let's say the shoreline, or if you're going to be pulling cranks, because we'll do that on lead core in the spring, we'll do that periodically throughout the early summer, what do we usually start with?
Number 5.
Yeah,
a 5.
So you guys do, I do 7. I'll throw a 5 out, it usually runs for a little bit, and then I'm like, yeah, off.
See, but that's exactly the point I'm getting at, is that when we talked about the guys that run Salmos or Rapalas or Flicker Shads, the same conversation me and Mitch have had a million times is, I think it's your confidence in what you're using.
Well, yeah, definitely.
There's definitely bait selection. It plays into it. I mean, sometimes some colors are better. Sometimes different lures are better. But really what I'm getting at is, if you're going to, crankbaits are expensive. So when you get crankbaits, my personal feeling is get what you're comfortable with and learn how to run those ones good.
Right.
Changing up all kinds of stuff during the day. And you're guessing if your Salmo's running at 12. If you're used to running flicker sheds, and you know at 120 feet out I'm going to be running 11 feet, a number 5, bam, at 1.8 or whatever.
Yeah, it is kind of a crazy deal, because I can tell you when we fished at Oahe, we were fishing 5s on the boards and flickers, and we were using the original full-size, bigger than life reef runners.
Yeah.
Straight off the back of the boat.
We used to do reef runners a ton.
Because and I'm not talking the deep little ripper, I mean the full size reef runner, right? And so the difference in those two sizes of baits is gigantic.
It's like twice the size almost.
But I can tell you right now that we caught plenty of fish on both. And so I don't know.
What about casting up to shore?
Well, casting is I don't know. It just depends. I know a lot of guys that cast 5s. Again, I like the 7 for two reasons. One is I just don't like how the 5 casts. It just doesn't cast very well. If there's any kind of wind, it's light. The 7 gives you a little more weight, a little more profile, but then it dives deeper, so you have to be careful. So, but I like the 7. I generally start with the 7 and I go from there.
Yeah. What about you, Mitch? What do you like?
Yeah, it depends. I just let the time of year kind of tell me. I'm doing early spring, I'm throwing stick baits, suspending baits where I can stop.
Like a Smithwick or a
Rogues. Whatever. Kind of the same in the fall, where then, in early May, if I'm casting crankbaits, I usually take with that number 5. Right now, if we were going to do it, I'd have a number 7 on.
Yep.
That's what I'd start with.
Yeah.
That's where I'm saying I'm getting away from my number 5s, because when I'm casting... And you said it, Josh. The reason why is because I get a little better distance out of it. I'm a little more accurate with my 7. And I can usually control the depth by my speed presentation. If I'm cranking in too fast and it starts banging on the bottom, I just take it a little bit slower just to keep it from hanging up the weeds or the rocks or whatever.
Yeah. There. Well, and I'm thinking more depth control for a lot of the lakes that I fish in the springtime, especially in these tournaments. We have a lot of weed growth or brush. And so, we'll throw 5s because you got the smaller treble. It gets hung up a little less. It pulls through a little easier. And plus, you can crank it a little bit faster, you can crank it a little slower and you get that roll. And it seems to be that's what triggers the fish in that, those May, early June tournaments that we have.
Well, when we have cabbage or stuff like that that's growing up pretty good, me and Mitchell still pitch 5s and 7s or whatever the heck we're going to pitch. But we switch our line selection on that. We're going to end up, we've thrown braid. What was the braid that we were throwing up in... when we were up in Jumbo,
I think 60-pound
braid.
Really?
Yep. And it was because, and it was a direct tie. We were having 60. So that looks like rope or like a big wire. Right. But you're fishing a lot of cover, so those fish can't see it in and out of those weeds really well. So they're not seeing the line as much. What? But every time we get hung up, we'd rip it. I mean, just really rip it hard, and it would clear itself, and you could keep fishing.
Well, and another good idea and another trick is if you're fishing in cover and your bait is going a touch too deep, a bass guy told me this. He said, put on 25-pound test mono, because mono floats, and use that as your leader on your super line, and that will actually, the thicker line, the bigger profile line, will actually help that bait stay just a little bit higher above those weeds.
That's and it a good won't, idea. I've never done
and
that.
And they won't dive as fast. So, especially if you're using a suspending bait, it'll stay a little bit higher up, and you can kind of keep it above, so... That's a good idea.
That I got a caution, guys, because we're talking about 60-pound braid and 25-pound mono. If you're pitching timber, hold on, because once you get hung up, you're never getting back.
Or you're pulled through that hook off, you know.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Straighten it out, whatever. But,
the one other thing with crankbaits for me is, you know, we all go to the store and we're looking at the candy aisle and all the different crankbaits you get and the different colors and sizes and, you know, so many different options. But, you know, years ago I kind of started doing this, and I almost can't help it now, but I buy a minimum of two of that size and color when I'm buying.
Oh, yeah, you got
because
to.
Because there's just too many times where, you know, that size and that color, that is working that day.
Right.
Or it seems to us anyway, and by all means, I don't want to just have one.
Or if you just have one and you're catching them, I'm going to end up throwing you in the water and taking your pole, because that's a BS if I'm not catching.
Right.
So you got to have one for your buddy.
You got at least two, because it never fails. Or, you know, if you're in a tournament situation, you start catching them on pre-fish, it never fails. You'll lose one, and you'll have one for the tournament. And you're not in a position where there's a Cabela's down the road, or a Bass Pro, or whatever, or Shields. And then you have issues going to find that crankbait. So, absolutely. I kick myself in the ass, because I'll do two, and then I think, whatever. What's the difference between two and four, and I'll buy four.
Yeah, I know. Next thing you're doing is... $100.
I know. So, but I mean,
But your collections look nice.
Yeah, but I got a nice big collection. And I mean, it's just, you know what, it's one of those things where it really is up to you. And remember, a lot of these lures are designed or painted in the colors to catch the fisherman, not the fish. So when you go, keep it simple. Keep it the basic colors that you would use in clear water, which are your naturals, and then your brighter colors, your fire tigers and stuff like that you would use in your stained water situations.
Or like cloudy.
Whatever.
A lot of water chop and whatnot.
Yeah. So those are the two big things.
Well, I hope that we were able to give you some tips on what we do. Follow us on Facebook. We're going to talk a little bit about some other things coming up on some future podcasts I think you guys will be interested in. So we're going to sign off, but thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
This has been All Eyes on Fishing. Join us again next time as we discuss your favorite topics. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and visit our website, alleyesonfishing.com, helping you to fish your next level.